Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna on News Talk.
Now, Carl Melvin is a psychotherapist and family estrangement expert. As well as running a busy practice, he delivers training globally to both estranged adults and professionals seeking to support this complex family issue. He's poured his expertise and his experience into his book, Navigating Family Estrangement, and Carl Melvin joins me in studio now. Carl, you're very welcome.
Thank you so much, Claire. Lovely to meet you.
So what led to your specific interest in this area?
Yeah, there's an interesting theme. Anyone who specializes in this area, they tend to have some subjective experience. So I do as well. Estrangement kind of is part of my own life. It's something I've had to live with for quite a long time. I think it was actually my entry into psychotherapy full stop, because I became estranged from certain people. I don't go into much detail publicly about it, but it would have been around 2007. And I just figured I'll just deal with this on my own. And it took about a year and a half to realise I was failing miserably at dealing with it on my own. I went to a therapist, had a great experience. I decided to re-educate. And then estrangement followed me. I didn't kind of consciously decide to specialise in this. But literally from the very first client they ever worked with, they were struggling with their family in very complex ways. And then from that point forward, this constant pattern of people coming in who were struggling in different ways with their families to the point where they became estranged. And I had all of this experience, which meant I had an understanding of what they might be going through and the challenges that they're facing. But I also had my own approach to how to manage those challenges, because I faced them myself. And, you know, that just led to more and more clinical experience, trying to understand why, you know, what families look like, how families fall apart in different ways that they do. And the more I deal with, the more I realise how little I know, how complicated families are across different cultures, different countries, different religious beliefs. And it's just trying to pull it together into an approach where professionals, whether it's psychologists, therapists, social workers, mediators, can try and develop some insight into the complexity of family life in contemporary society, how they fall apart, and what we can do to support people through that.
It's such an earth-shattering word, isn't it? Estrangement, because we don't use it in any other context. You know, break down, break up. We use them in different definitions, and it's something we get more used to. Estrangement is something you only really use in this context. Yeah. What is the definition of family estrangement?
Well, see, let me ask you, what do you think it is?
Well, you're not speaking to a family member anymore.
Yeah. So you're not wrong, but you're not fully right either. And you're right, if you ask the average person, and I would have thought the same, especially early in my clinical practice, the people that were coming in had reached a point where there was no contact at all. But estrangement is fundamentally about family members creating distance from each other, but they're very consciously creating distance, okay? So estrangement is not the same as losing touch. It's not the same as the normal kind of fallouts that happen. Like, families have rows, they disagree, they might go a period of days, weeks, and then they meet up and everything is fine. Estrangement is something much more long term, sometimes very permanent. But the distance that exists in families, it sits on a continuum. So we'll have people who we would say are less estranged, and that might mean an emotional estrangement. So there's examples where families are actually talking to each other on a regular basis for a whole range of reasons. For example, maybe there's a health crisis in the family and all of a sudden people have to speak to each other, they have to interact. Maybe Christmas, holiday periods, people have to interact. Maybe habit, tradition, guilt, shame. These all influence why families actually stay together, even if they'd rather not do that. Then the other end of the continuum are people who are, say, are more estranged. And that's similar to a physical estrangement. And in those cases, people go to extreme lengths to not have no contact whatsoever with their family. And I've had clients who are Irish, but they live in Australia and the US and all over the world. And publicly, they'll say to people, I moved away to improve the quality of their life and get, you know, maybe earn a better income. Privately, they're telling me, Carol, I was getting away from the chaos of my family because it was so unmanageable. And they felt like there's no other choice. The only way for them to feel safe and get some sense of themselves was to pull back completely. And I've even heard extreme examples of people changing their names, of selling the house in a very short space of time and not telling any family members at all. And it's relative to how unsafe they felt in that dynamic and how communication had completely broken down to the point where, like, this is how far back I need to be from these people.
Okay, so there may be contact in certain circumstances, but a boundary has gone up.
Yeah, I mean, the difference between low contact versus no contact, and they're really common terms you see. Again, low contact is more the less estranged. We do talk, maybe not as frequently as we did in the past, but there's still some interactions there. Even I see families, they communicate on a very superficial level. Like, they keep it very basic and very civil, but underpinning that is a great deal of anger, resentment, and it does play out at some point, often when there's drink or often when it's Christmas or other family events where people are really forced to be around each other. Then no contact is the obvious. They do go again, no physical contact, no phone contact, no nothing.
How prevalent is it? You go into that a little bit in the book, and I found that interesting.
Yeah, again, the research varies. So the study that I would have cited the most came from the UK, and that was 2015. And they came in at 1 in 5 adults are estranged from their family members, which is a high enough population. But everybody was waiting for a US study around 2020 because they were hopeful that it might give us a better indication. And that researcher came in at 1 in 4 adults, which is about, it was actually close to the 27%. It was a US study, and there's going to be cultural differences between here and the US, particularly when you look at divorce is often cited as the most common reason, and divorce rates are much higher in the US than they are over here. But like, if you cling to that figure, 1 in 4, something like 67 million people in the US alone are affected by this. I've always argued estrangement has always been here. It's not necessarily on the rise, and there's the discussions around are more people becoming estranged. We don't have data to support that. We do know that there's more people talking about it publicly, which may suggest it's on the rise, but we don't know. But I think in Ireland, we've just culture of pushing things under the carpet. You know, we're very good at it. And I think what was happening, that there was a lot of issues that were under the current, not spoken about, not addressed properly. People were still interacting and still having some kind of a relationship, but not close, not comfortable, not sharing aspects of themselves. But with social media and more people sharing the situation, it's almost normalizing people pulling back and actually going full no contact and creating as much physical distance as they can get.
I think there's a lot of stereotypes we have around estrangement, and you really break a lot of them down and gave me a real understanding. I think we often think money is at the root of a lot of it, you know, that where there's a will, there's a war kind of thing. And that can happen. That can really break families apart, particularly when they're in the throes of grief or recalibrating when they've lost a family member. But you go through the different reasons, and they're complex and many, but sometimes there can be tragic circumstances, addiction or something along those lines. And there can also be more valid reasons. So we should try and break through these stereotypes, because that sort of adds to guilt and shame, doesn't it, around it?
There's an awful stigma surrounding this. And if you even look at the research around estrangement and the stereotypes that exist around it, I mean, it's interesting, sons and daughters who are estranged from their parents, there's some positive stereotypes. Sometimes they're actually viewed as being independent and strong and standing up for themselves. But there's negatives there as well around being selfish and being unrealistic in their expectations. But parents, on the other end of this, is parents, mothers and fathers who are estranged from their sons and daughters. And the stereotypes are universally negative, and particularly for mothers, which is an awful tragedy, because I would work with a lot of mothers who are estranged from their sons and daughters, and they're lovely people and they're not abusive. And they, in many cases, they don't understand how this happened. Often they feel like there's other alienating factors, like a partner or somebody else in their life who's influencing this person, that their son or daughter, to the point where they're just pulling back. But you're right, the reasons are very complicated, and it's rarely isolated to one thing. Now, in the research, again, they have to kind of identify and categorise certain things. So from the perspective of sons and daughters, they'll often say that the main reason is emotional abuse. And then underneath that, pressures, favouritism, unrealistic expectations. But if you look at the parents' perspective, they'll always accredit it to something external, not something that they did, but something outside of themselves. So again, parents will say divorce is the number one reason why they became estranged. But we know that within that title, within that process of becoming divorced, it's much more complicated. There's conflicts, there's breakdown of communication, there's pressures, there's expectations around loyalties. They all contribute to the estrangement. So it's not just divorce. It's the nature of the divorce. It's the quality of the co-parenting relationship after it. But yeah, and so part of these conversations are bringing more nuance into it, because it is complicated. But some people do cling to certain things. You know, a really common one, which is very tragic, is the abuse that happens in families. And I have to talk about that. But some people only talk about that, or some people don't want to talk about it because it's either too difficult, or they feel like it's invalidating their own experiences. For example, if it's a parent, you know, they don't want to hear about abuse because they feel like they weren't abusive and it wasn't their fault. And maybe that's true. But again, it's been able to hold the difficult conversation and say, we're not blaming or judging anybody, but we have to have nuance if we're actually going to try to heal this situation. Not necessarily bring families back together, because that isn't always appropriate, but help people move forward with their lives and maybe grieve some of this, just create a sense of themselves away from the family unit, which is a very hard thing to do. You know, if you identify as a mother and a father, which many of us do, and then that son and daughter, or all of them are not talking to you anymore, well, who am I now? You know, and not only that, I don't know who I am because my identity has changed, but I also don't get to grieve this publicly. There's no funeral for people who are estranged. So the rituals and the traditions that we have that are so important to our society are not available to us because of the stigma and because society generally can't quite understand how is this a form of grief. They live 10 minutes down the road. You can ring them right now and have a chat with them. But then there's something has changed, something has lost between them and it may not be recovered. And being able to even acknowledge that and give people some support for that. And it's hard. And even, you know, I would have clients come to me who previously gone to therapists. And look, therapy is an incredibly hard job and I admire anyone that does it, but they don't always get it right. And there's a tendency sometimes to bring in our own families into the conversation, which isn't always appropriate. And I call it the subjective blur in the book because, like, we're here talking about a broader concept of family, but there's a part of you that's a little bit thinking about your own family. And same for me and same for every human being that's watching this, but it's bigger than our own families. And we're going to talk to another person about their family. We have to be able to draw the line between my experiences, my attachments, and what I've been through versus everybody else. But it requires a level of reflection that's not people are even, they've not motivated, they've no interest in thinking in those terms. So then they project, which is what human people do, and they'll project their own values, their own beliefs, their own views, their own experiences. And what I find as well, for example, if I was to share a situation where a parent was one person that was experienced abuse from a parent, talking to somebody else whose parent was lovely, it could trigger a really defensive response inside of them. They become really uncomfortable with this conversation or with this idea that there is a parent out there who was mean or being disrespectful or maybe even abusive. And those defensive reactions get in the way as well. And it's just trying to create platforms where we can talk about this and realize we're not talking about you, we're talking about somebody else. And that might open the door to more conversation and more nuance.
Yeah, and even different people's perspectives. Like, it really blew my mind when I read about even siblings in the one family. They can have very different experiences of the same parents in the same household, yeah, because the parents were at different stages of their life when they had each one of them, even with just a year or two between them. And you do also talk in the book, I had to nearly kind of put it down for a minute and let it land for a minute, about how this is really important because it does bleed out into society. So we do view the family as our foundation. So when that splits for whatever reason, that can peter out into society and go in the reverse. Mm-hmm. And a lot of what you were talking about there with therapy and boundaries and all that, that can be a healthy thing to do. But can it be unhealthy for us to step away for our family, create that boundary for our own protection, but not get support with that?
Yeah. It's complicated. So there's different aspects to this. First of all, is estrangement a good thing? Okay, and there's people who will say that they've had positive effects from pulling back from family, more freedom, more independence. But is it good for the broader society? I don't know. Okay, and we don't really know because we don't have long-term studies around the long. We just have an insight into how it's affected the individuals who are affected. But across the whole family, it's a tough one to know. And you're right, it bleeds into so many different areas. I mean, I consider this a public health crisis, okay, because many people who come in, they were depressed, they were anxious, addiction problems, financial problems, all manner of health problems. I'm not saying family is the root cause of all of this because that's too reductive, but family is at the heart of a lot of it. And I know even with many of my own clients, they'll talk about they became estranged from family, it consumed them, they spent so much time ruminating, but then they got into work. Okay, and they're expected to perform at work. I remember one particular person, she had quite a senior job in her role in her job, and she started to make mistakes because she was distracted all the time because she was thinking about this. And that really bothered her, that all of a sudden this really devastating estrangement that happened over here is now contaminating another really important part of her life. But yeah, having the right support in place is important. But again, government doesn't really quite recognise this. You know, it's not something that's on their agenda. I'm doing some work at the moment with the USI, the Students' Union, because they don't even be familiar with the issues around SUSI grants in Ireland, where if you're estranged from your parents, you have to prove your estrangement. The way you prove it is you contact the Gardaí or you contact TUSLA, a social worker. But you can imagine someone 17, 18, 19, 20, still very young, estranged from parents and they're still suffering the psychological impact, the last thing they're going to do is report it to a guard or report it even to TUSLA because they're terrified of all of these consequences. And we've just started a campaign, hopefully we'll launch it later in the year. We're just trying to raise awareness around what estrangement is and how it affects students, because they're now deprived of really important economic support that they really need because they don't have the economic support from their family now.
Yeah, I mean, it is so complex. What changes would you like to see come in? You talk at length in the book about reducing this shame and stigma, because that can often create a roadblock to people seeking support. And then you also hope that this book makes it into the hands of professionals so that they have a roadmap of how to help people through family estrangement. I mean, there's never a magic wand, is it, to make sure all families get on well forever and ever? That would be lovely. But what is the things that you want to see change?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It's a big ask to expect all families get on all of the time, and families have problems, but this is something much more insidious and much more long term, and it requires very specialised supports. It's hard to know what I'm asking because it's hard to know where we even begin. I mean, look, the likes of coming on and talking to you, like, this is part of what I'm asking for, just public discourse and a discourse that doesn't reduce people's experiences and isn't quick to form opinions. Even if you go onto social media now, which I make a point of doing, looking at the comment sections just to see the quality of the conversations and reactions. And in fairness, there is some improvement around people respecting that there's, like, for example, if it's an article that I may have written or somebody else has written around a case study, but there's only 3 or 4 paragraphs. You couldn't know enough to form an opinion based on that. And I'm seeing people saying, look, there's not enough information, but I say it's really tough. Like, something like that is an appropriate response. That's great. There's a degree of understanding, a degree of compassion. It's the other end of it where people can't wait to judge and form opinions based on very simplistic roles. For example, if someone is estranged from a parent, that's your mother, that's your father, that's disgraceful, you shouldn't call yourself, or you can't call yourself a son or a daughter anymore. So quick to judge, you know. And I think it would be ideal to have some kind of educational platform for people, the broader society and professionals specifically, can actually go and learn something about this and be able to understand that it extends way past their own experiences, but invite them to park their own experiences and understand that this happens to so many people. It might even happen to them. I mean, my core values around this is don't take your family for granted, because I have seen families who were fine, who were functioning absolutely okay, and then one tragic loss, as you mentioned at the start, and all of a sudden everyone grieves differently, not everyone can cope. The expectations after that loss are quite different as well. For example, one person may decide, I'm going to manage the funeral, I'm going to look after the headstone, the church and all the rest, and that could rub people up the wrong way. I'm working with someone at the moment who doesn't get on with his family, and one of his parents passed away, but the other family went ahead and picked the headstone, put the message on the headstone. He wasn't involved whatsoever in that decision. He's absolutely devastated by this because, again, he was deprived of an important part of the grieving process. So I think awareness campaigns is the start. Okay, just again, letting people know that this is something that's very real. It affects a great number of people, more than many realise. And again, that's part of the closed door nature of these issues. They do happen behind closed doors. No one sees what's happening. Everyone thinks that their family is the worst family in the world. It's only when you actually come together and have these type of conversations you realise it is so prevalent and that there is no perfect family. There's just a scale of some are more dysfunctional than others to the point where they literally cannot function. But yeah, education, I think it starts with education.
And I'm really conscious that there could be somebody listening who is going through this right now and is carrying that. So for someone listening estranged from their family member, what would your advice be to them?
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's a cliche, but they're certainly not on their own, and understand that there's many people who are going through this. There's tons of resources online. Some people go towards the Facebook groups. There are Facebook support groups. The only thing I'll say is you kind of have to go in and watch them first and see how they're moderated, because some have different rules. I've seen Facebook groups where people were sharing pictures of their estranged family members or sharing messages of estranged family members. And I was appalled when I saw this because it's such a privacy or conflict of privacy and really stepping over boundaries. So, you know, reaching out for support if they're not ready to necessarily talk to their friends about it. But I would hope at some point they will actually start to talk to friends. Most people are struggling with their family. They do carry a great deal of shame, which negates the ability to feel comfortable sharing this really vulnerable and very painful thing to anyone that they're close to. And but more often than not, it's fine. The family or the friends will understand. They'll offer some kind of support. It's just taking that risk at the start to reveal this part of their life that they carry so much shame over. So I would encourage them, when they're ready, at least entertain the notion of talking to somebody. After that, and after they've shared and they realise nothing bad's going to happen, they're not going to become estranged from their friends, then it's even more layers of becoming more, more comfortable with asking for specific help, actually asking their partner, their friend, this is how specifically I need you, how to help me. Because everyone's needs are different based on their estrangement nature or the type of estrangement. So if someone interacts with their family regularly enough, they will need a different type of support from someone who's on the other end who never sees their family. I argue, and I... not that I prioritise clients, but when someone comes, reaches out to me and I know they sometimes live under the same roof, sometimes they've an event coming up and they're dreading it, or christening, whatever it is, I kind of put more time into those people because I know they need that support. But it's actually finding out what exactly they need from me. But they, you know, what happens so much as well is that, I mean, most of my clients are women. Don't ask me why. Male participation is quite weak in the research and even showing up for therapy. But their partners, they're nice people, but they just don't get it. And being able to confront a partner and say, look, I actually really need your help. I need you to understand what I'm going through. And this is specifically what I need from you. Even that, it's good for their self-esteem. It's part of their own growth. And we have to take risks to grow. It's the only way.
Well, the book is excellent. It goes into huge detail. You've even mocked up case studies in the back of the different modalities and the roadmaps and how that helped in different situations. There's also a coping mechanism toolbox for people, as well as just looking at the topic from any angle and every angle. And I think, as you said, for people to realise that it is not necessarily something that they did wrong, it is not shame for them to carry, and that it is happening more often than, unfortunately, we speak about. But hopefully this conversation and this book is the start of many. The book is called Navigating Family Estrangement, Helping Adults Understand and Manage the Challenges of Family Estrangement. Carl Melvin, you can find out more at carlmelvin.com. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much, Claire.
Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna. Sunday morning at 8 on News Talk.